Do members of the subcommittee have questions for Mr. Quinlan and his team this evening? Ms. Whitaker.
Mr. Quinlan, the $7.5 million North Country Job Creation Fund, is that different than the $200 million Forward New Hampshire Fund? And if so, how?
It is. So that was a commitment that we had made actually prior to announcing the Forward New Hampshire Fund. It is a North Country focused job creation initiative where we've essentially established a board, an independent board. It already exists. It's chaired by former Senator John Gallas and other leaders in the North Country. And essentially, we provide funding to that organization. They solicit expressions of interest as to how those dollars can be used in the North Country to create jobs, and they make determinations. We've actually provided some advance funding to them already. That's one example of where we've, even prior to getting our permits or having this project in service, we've already made investments. So their first round of grants took place in 2015. It's managed entirely by leaders in the North Country, and it's completely separate and apart from the Forward New Hampshire Fund.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Commissioner Bailey.
Thank you. The $3.8 billion impact for economic impact for New Hampshire, is that, what period of time is that over?
So many of those benefits are over a 20-year period, with the exception of the energy benefit, because it's difficult to project energy markets and effects much longer than 10 years out. Our experts only felt comfortable on the energy analysis going 10 years. So the energy benefit, 10-year period, everything else, 20-year period.
Okay, and on the energy benefit, would the savings amount change if the Spectra project and the Kinder Morgan project are built, and also if oil and LNG prices stayed low?
So there are a lot of variables in that type of analysis, so view that as a snapshot in time. You know, the experts make assumptions as to power plant retirements, power plant additions, new gas infrastructure that may come into the region, what happens in the forward capacity market. So there are a lot of assumptions underlying that analysis. A key one is what happens with gas infrastructure. You know, if substantial amount of new gas infrastructure comes into New England, energy prices should moderate. You shouldn't see the spikiness that you see today. Now, what happens long term? Does that drive coal and oil plants, the remaining coal and oil fleet, out of the market towards retirement? Do additional nuclear plants retire? It's a fairly complicated model that looks at plant additions and subtractions. It does it under a range of scenarios. The ones you're referring to specifically are low gas sensitivity and are high gas sensitivity. So there are some sensitivities where we assume, the expert assumes, there is no new gas pipeline. Okay? And LNG goes overseas as opposed to being parked in Boston Harbor as it's been the last couple of winters. That leads to very high future energy prices. That's one bounding case. The other bounding case is a lot of new pipeline infrastructure, so it no longer creates a scarcity situation. So you're focused on a key variable, what happens under gas scenarios, and the experts have analyzed the range.
Can you tell me where in the record that is so I could look at that?
Yeah, so it's all under a expert report done by London Economics.
Okay, you told me that the other day, and I didn't have time to look for it, but that's in the record somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll find it.
And you'll see the range of scenarios they've evaluated, and there are a lot of variables.
Okay,
but
all right.
Gas supply is a key one, and gas price.
Yeah. Okay.
Very key.
All right. A couple more questions.
Sure.
And you may not know the answers to these, but on our first stop today, we were at Boyce Road, and we were
Boyce Road
in Concord, and we were looking at the crossing, and the person who was narrating the tour told us that I think it was a 115 kV line had to be moved to the left, and it looked like it was 10 feet away from a house. And I was wondering, how you can move it to the left when the house is right there. Does the code allow you to build a transmission line over the house, or was it just a perception thing? I just, you know, if anybody could fill me in on that, I'd appreciate it.
So, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Bose.
So the house you're referring to is right on the edge of the right-of-way. By code, you're not allowed to go over the house unless you have appropriate clearances. The way that the design is gone in that area is that the conductors will be facing into the right-of-way or away from that house.
Okay.
And they are designed to meet the National Energy Safety Code. So that it does meet the clearance requirements for that particular size of conductor.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Bose, anything you'd add?
So just to add that there are actually two properties in that Concord area that were built on the right-of-way and encroached on the easement area. We have designed around that. I think one of them is what Mr. Johnson just talked about. There is a second one, and we've done a similar workaround to allow the house to remain on the easement area or in the easement area, but the construction can take place around it.
Thank you. And one more thing that I would ask, maybe if you could draw for me, not here, but give it to, you know, file it. At the Concord hearing, we heard from a gentleman who was very upset, who lives in Deerfield. I think his name was Mr. Bilodeau. Mm. And he said that the Deerfield substation backs right up to his property and that the line is going to end on his property. And we viewed the Deerfield substation today, and I asked where the house was, and some of the people pointed to the back. And so I was wondering if you could provide a map that outlines the substation as it exists today and then shows what the footprint of the new substation and the location of his house and property line.
Yeah, we could certainly do that, and we have actually looked into the issue raised associated with the Bilodeau property, just like any other issue raised here where a landowner or municipality indicates they're not getting the information they need. We're following up on every one of those. So we have a tracking matrix. I'm going to ask Mr. Johnson to address the Bilodeau residents.
Thank you. Okay.
So we did reach out to Mr. Bilodeau yesterday. We spoke to his wife and are in the midst of arranging a site visit. Mr. Bilodeau lives to the south off Nottingham Road of the actual substation itself, which is not on the corridor that we'll be building the 345 lines are. He's part of the corridor that stretches between Deerfield and Scopey Pond. So he's about a quarter to half a mile south of the actual substation itself, on the opposite side of the right-of-way from where the substation is today.
Okay,
so we'll provide a map.
Yeah, show me a map, and that'd be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Way.
Mr. Quinlan, there's been some interest on the 2,600 jobs, and I'm wondering, one, how you arrived at that number, but also, two, if you've had the opportunity or will have the opportunity maybe to break that down a little bit more by the activity type. Are we talking about timber? Are we talking about journeyman linemen? And maybe a little bit about the longevity of the jobs and over the long term.
Yeah, so the details on the jobs analysis are in the same London economic expert report where they look at job effects, and they do it both analytically and then they analyze it based upon comparable projects, and they actually do break it down between direct jobs and indirect jobs, so it's laid out in quite a bit of detail there. You know, I'll give you a high level sense for that. You know, a relatively small percentage of those are actual line workers doing electric work. That's probably several hundred of those jobs. Many of those jobs are direct contractors or services that we need to retain to, you know, clear rights of way, deliver gravel, build roads. That's a large chunk. And then there's actually a second order job effect, which is the local businesses necessary to support, you know, a $1.6 billion infrastructure project. It's all laid out in quite some detail in that report. Lisa, do you want to share any of the jobs breakdown? Lisa Shapiro is an economist. Do you want to introduce yourself and add some light to this?
My name is Lisa Shapiro. an economist consulting with a project. I didn't perform the study, but I did provide some of the inputs into it. The breakdown is pretty detailed in the report, so I think that would be more helpful to look at it. In terms of, you asked the specific question about longer term jobs, there's also a modeling in the report with the lower energy costs. As we know, energy costs that are high do have an impact on job production, retention. They have an impact on expenditures of homeowners, and so there is a longevity of job production over 500 a year based on the lowered energy costs as well as the ongoing operating and maintenance, which is not a significant number, but there is about $3 to $5 million a year that will be spent for operation and maintenance as well as for the Ford New Hampshire Fund.
And Lisa, just one quick question, the 500 per year, does that also include the indirect jobs as well?
Yes, from the and that's run from the REMI model.
REMI model, all right.
Yeah. And we can provide you some citations that get you directly to that table in the analysis and in the expert report.
Very good.
Are there any other questions from the subcommittee? All right,